Sexism and gender inequality have challenged tech companies for decades, and the headlines persist, from Ellen Pao to James Damore. This week on Techonomics, host Jason Middleton and guest host Julian Guthrie talk with two people on seemingly different sides, a Berkeley-trained feminist author and a Harvard-trained biologist who used to be a programmer at Google.
Hello, welcome back, and as always, thanks for listening. Silicon Valley companies do not have a very good record of diversity in gender. The issue of gender inequality gets a lot of coverage and a lot of lip service by executives, but it remains a stubbornly difficult challenge. Whistleblower, author, and nigh-on hero Ellen Pao writes that the bro culture that permeated Wall Street in the 80s and 90s has migrated far too successfully into Silicon Valley. Now, being a systemic problem means we will get periodic headlines that spark the debate again, and then again and again and again. And a recent internal memo at Google went external, and in that memo, the author concluded that women were not as well suited for tech work as men. James Damore was fired from Google for that memo. And this week on Techonomics, he's discussing that episode of his life with our other guest, Dr. Luann Brizendine. She is a neuropsychiatrist who is a researcher, clinician, and professor at the University of California, San Francisco. She is also the author of two books, The Female Brain and The Male Brain. Also joining me to keep the conversation going is Julian Guthrie. Julian is the author of How to Build a Spaceship. She's a veteran journalist, and she's hosted Techonomics before as well. Here's the third segment out of four with all of our guests.
Do you, James, have any regrets about anything that you wrote or the way that this came out, or how do you feel about that now?
I regret using the word neuroticism just because people have shown that to neurotic and have just used that as a quote against me.
Mm-hmm.
But I obviously wish that this had just stayed inside Google and I was able to just have one-on-one conversations with them, try to resolve this. I really just wanted to work more with the diversity programs.
So you had no expectation that this might leak or even lead to your termination?
No, I don't think anything like this has really happened before at Google, so I didn't think that this would happen, really.
And I wonder, I mean, I don't really have a formulated take on Google's response to it, but I mean, I know that Mr. Pachai had to come back from vacation a little bit early to terminate you in a very public way. Could that have been handled differently from your experience within Google?
Yeah, they definitely could have handled it differently and come together and say, hey, we don't necessarily agree on everything, but being able to voice your opinion and try to improve the workplace is a core Google value. And, you know, we want to work together and actually improve things.
Are you still contemplating legal pushback on this?
Yeah, so I filed a claim with the National Labor Relations Board, which often works with unions, and being able to work together to improve workplace conditions. And we filed a claim, and so the federal government is actually looking into some of my claims right now.
You know, it seems that, you know, you did not intend for it to leak. You wanted to be more involved in the diversity thinking and programming and policy at Google, and it's not beyond the realm of possibility that you could go back. Would you consider going back if Google made a change and decided to bring you back on?
I would definitely consider it. I mean, I like Google and the benefits are obviously great. And, you know, you working on something that billions of people use. I would be scared, though, if, you know, HR or other people would just try to find some random thing that I say and mm-hmm. try to get me fired again or
yeah.
just keep harassing me to make my life difficult.
I suppose you would be seen as a lightning rod, maybe.
Yeah.
So let me ask more of a kind of a macro question. It seems in all of these discussions we're having about gender that we've kind of gone backward. I mean, in terms of this national dialogue around gender and then what came up and the reaction to the memo that you wrote. But is it that there's this revelation that misogyny is very deep in our culture still at this moment? Is there a resurgence in that? It just feels as though this is a topic of conversation that we shouldn't necessarily be having right now. And I'd love to hear from Luann as well. And James, your take on this too.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's been a lot of high profile cases where we do see sexual harassment against women. And those have been really blown up. And those are right in the top of our minds. also, I think a lot of this ideology is that there can be no differences between people. And so any disparity that we see must be due to some sort of differential treatment of men and women. And of course, you know, we do treat men and women differently, but I don't think that that's the sole reason why we see only 20% of women in tech.
Luann, what would you say? So you were a feminist at Berkeley in the 70s and thinking that all of these questions were being raised and answered and fought for at the time. And here we are on this topic again. Where are we and why?
It's rather astounding that we are revisiting this all these years later. And I can remember, because I was, you know, in that wave in the 70s of young women who basically felt that the patriarchy was keeping us down and that we had to fight for our rights and we had to fight for equal pay for equal work. And I can remember the great disappointment when that did not pass. And so it's very shocking that we're all these years later, past 1974, 76, that this is still a topic of discussion. And I can remember one of the things that I reflect on now that really speaks to me in this era, which is that there was what I call mandatory unisex, that nothing could be different between males and females. You had to be able to, anything that you said that was different automatically meant that women lost. You had to have the same sex drive, you had to have the same orgasm, you had to have the same everything. And it was, you couldn't talk about the differences between males and females because that was heresy. So, of course, here I was all these years later, and I wrote The Female Brain and then The Male Brain, coming from my years of, you know, work in neuropsychiatry, and I found that that's still very prevalent, that it's a lightning rod. Talking about gender differences and gender wars is still a lightning rod. And I think James brings up a really important point. So when you get down very deep in the minutia of the data and of individuals, is where this really, of course, matters. And I think the issue of misogyny, and that everything is due to discrimination against some group, either a racial group or a gender group, and there's still the feeling that you can pin all of this. And I think employers and everyone is very, very wary of stepping on that landmine. So that means that some truths are not being spoken, which I think James brings up that issue. Some truths are not being spoken. And I'm still astounded. You know, Deborah Tannen is one of my heroes, too, in sort of dissecting the dialogue and the language that's used in the workplace, and how I know from being a teacher at the university, a professor at the university, when I give a lecture to 150 medical students, you know, at UCSF, the first three hands that are up, the first three questions still to this day, you know, are males. And then the females either ask their question further on down, or they come up to me after class. So there's still a big difference in the dialogue in a public setting or in a group. And I don't know if that's like true in teams at Google or not, in the smaller teams where there's 6 to 8 people. But it's still very annoying to women that they feel that they can say something or an idea, and then 15 minutes later, a male in the group will basically say the same thing she has said and be listened to and think that it's a good idea and have the attribution for the idea going to him. I mean, there are those types of annoying things. And I've talked to young women engineers that are in the tech world, and they feel the senior male engineers that get assigned to be their mentors, they don't quite know what to do with them, and they feel they don't have the dialogue with their senior male engineer mentor that they would like. And now that they're becoming mentors themselves, they know it's more complicated than that, and that's not just a gender issue. So I think that taking things down to the individual level and looking at the data at a more granular level, it's really important for all of us to kind of figure out how to make the workplace where we can use all of our most creative male and female brains to do the work that needs to get done in a creative way. I mean, we need everybody on this project. So in our country, I think that what's happened in the political realm this past year has reignited the discussion of sexism and misogyny in a robust way, and into the way that the power differential of powerful males treating younger females and feeling that they can just, you know, be sexual predators, and that that's something that's we all know it's not okay, but it seems to be something that's just kind of blown off by certain elements, and the backlash to white males feeling like they've really been left out. And this is what I think reignited the realization that we need to be inclusive and take everybody in. And the pendulum, when it swings too far too fast and it leaves other people behind, we need to look at that carefully. And I think that there's a very big gender message in a issue of sexism, misogyny, but also leaving out or criticizing and pointing the finger at white males is something that we need to, you know, we need to just truthfully look at that seriously.
That was the third segment of this week's conversation around gender inequality in Silicon Valley and really the whole tech sector. James Damore is the author of the Google memo that you likely have heard about, where he concluded that women were not of the right temperament to succeed in tech. Dr. Luann Brizendine is a neuropsychiatrist and the author of two books on the subject, The Male Brain and The Female Brain. Also joining me on the chat, of course, is Julian Guthrie. She's a journalist, an author, and a fill-in host here on Techonomics. All four of this week's segments are online. There are also longer web-only versions in our podcast edition at kgoradio.com/techonomics. Coming up, the final segment with all of our guests as we wrap things up. And then Julian and I have a quick real-time reaction to what we pulled from that conversation. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back.